Well, Richard, you've been doing a lot of tower work, radio work for us, and I don't understand anything about it. Can you tell us what you've been doing with our tower on our tower?
So KRLS has a permit from the Federal Communications Commission to increase the amount of power that they transmit from the KRLS antenna. Well, each antenna is rated for how much power it can handle, and the one you've been using has a rating for the power level that you have been running. Now you're going to increase the power level, which requires a bigger antenna and a bigger transmitter. That's what takes incoming electrical power and then produces the radio waves that everybody enjoys listening to. That's called the transmitter. So the existing transmitter can make a certain amount of power. The new transmitter makes more power. And it's a state-of-the-art transmitter. It's all solid state. There's no tubes. Well, it's all transistors. And it's much more efficient. So it's an energy-efficient transmitter to boot.
Well, and are you using the same tower, or we have a new tower, or what?
No, we're replacing the existing tower with a new tower that is the same height and basically the same, it appears the same, but it's solid rod instead of pipe, which the old tower is made out of tubular steel. The new tower is all solid steel, so it can hold a bigger antenna. Where
I
I had
see.
to start with this was Mel, the owner, came to me and said he had this construction permit, and I had to look at what was his tower that he owned capable of supporting, and what kind of electrical service does he have coming into the building to run the transmitter? Things have limitations. You know, like your house, you're not going to buy a 400 amp service for your house. You have a 200 amp service. Well, and that runs everything that you own, the dishwasher and this. Well, if suddenly you open up a welding shop in your garage, wow, 200 amps isn't enough. So we need to get more power in here. So you have to start looking at the infrastructure to support the system.
Okay, so we've got all this new stuff. What's it mean for the listener?
For the listener, I would say the new transmitter in itself is going to sound clearer and brighter, being a current state-of-the-art transmitter. It also has more redundancy built into it. So if there is a failure within the transmitter, it will automatically fold back in power and stay on the air.
Oh, well, that's nice.
Well, it is. I mean, the existing transmitter has one tube in there that makes all the power that you use. Well, when that tube goes bad, the transmitter's off. And you're not reaching the listeners at all. So then you got to go in and fix it, you know, change the tube or service the transmitter. The new transmitter, made by a company in Canada called Nautel, they're one of the foremost transmitter manufacturers in the world right now. And I'm really happy to work with them because their product is stunning. And they're great people to work with if you have questions. But if something fails within it, it still stays on the air with less power because it has modules instead of one circuit that does it all.
And so let's just say we have bad weather, high winds, an ice storm or something,
Well, let's say
where,
an ice storm. An ice storm
okay.
would be the biggest thing because the antenna gets iced up. So then the transmitter sees that as a change in the antenna and it needs to alter its power output to match or work with that change in the antenna. The Nautel transmitter is really smart. It figures that out and it reduces the power so it won't damage itself, but it stays on the air.
Okay, so in an emergency like that, a few years ago we had a couple of ice storms back to back, maybe 2 weeks apart, where lots of people were without power. I think our transmitter might have went out just briefly or just not very long. It was doing pretty good, but I think we had a short outage. But I mean, there were people all over the county just hiding out or hanging out in coffee shops and restaurants because they didn't have any power at home. And they were tuned to us to know what was happening in the storm. And the probability of us staying on so they could get that information will be greater with this new transmitter.
Well, actually, you have a generator at the site, and that's what kept you online during that ice storm. So, because the AC power, the overhead power, was out. So, you have a generator that's hooked to an LP tank, a very large LP tank, actually. I think you could run that generator for a month if you needed to keep that site online. So, the site is backed up for utility power.
And how about the transmitter, the new transmitter? Is that going to impact anything during an ice storm?
It just senses changes in the antenna and then retunes itself to allow for that. So we can make the maximum amount of power for maximum amount of reach during inclement weather.
Well, that sounds like a pretty smart machine.
It's a very smart machine. And you actually can hook this thing in the internet and call it on your cell phone, on your smartphone, and talk to it. Now you're using a telephone system to call into the transmitter and get readings from it. Well, that I will have that also, but on the new smartphones, the transmitter will send you an email or a text if it has a problem, and it also sends an email to the factory in Canada to say, something's wrong here.
Wow.
So when you call the factory, they can bring up the log of your transmitter and say, oh, we see you're having an issue with this particular circuit, and we can send you another one overnight and have it repaired tomorrow. You know, I mean, it's a kind of support that's just tremendous on this transmitter.
How'd you learn all this?
All?
Yeah. Well, that's a lot. It's about installation. It's about the computers, the transmitters, and radios itself. The technical component of it isn't easy. That's like rocket scientist stuff, right?
Actually, it really isn't. It's just a series of boxes that you hook together, and it's knowing how to make things play well together. How do you hook a power pole to an antenna and make it radiate? Well, what boxes does it take in between to do that? You're just converting one energy to a different energy to another energy that can reach out to the listeners or the viewers. I work television also. So to me, logistics are the biggest part of my work. I have the tower crew, the electrician, moving and storage company, the heating and air conditioning guy, and the gravel company that is going to work on the road for us, and the foundation company that put in the foundations for the towers. So all these people I need to coordinate because they have to come in a particular order. And it's always interesting to do a rebuild like this because the station's funny. They like to stay on the air while they're being rebuilt. So this is like riding a bicycle while it's on fire and trying not to get burned or crash.
And we've had minimal, if any...
Yesterday, we transferred one system over to the new tower, and we had maybe a total of 20 seconds of interruption.
Switching. So we might not have even noticed.
They were announcing ahead of it. I had worked with Jim Butler, the manager, to say why I think the outage would be about 2 minutes, and we were able to be more ready and make it 15 seconds instead.
All right. So you climb these towers, I presume.
I have climbed towers in my life. I used to have a tower erecting company.
When did you first climb a tower?
So that would have been 1978.
Okay, so what was that like, climbing a tower?
It was great.
It was great?
It was super.
You weren't nervous or scared?
Well, of course you're nervous. You have to have respect of where you are. As you drive down the freeway, and you're on a two-lane road and you're doing 65, 70 miles an hour, you have great respect for what's in the other lane. And you want to stay in your lane and they need to stay in their lane, right? Tower work is very much like that, but it's like you're passing a series of semis constantly at about 80 miles an hour. So you're under the gun to stay alert.
And is it hard to stay alert or does it just becomes like routine, second nature? When you're up there.
Well, there's a second nature to it, but that can have a pitfall to it also, because that leads to complacency.
Mm-hmm. How high up do you get?
I've actually been to 2,062 feet.
2,062 feet? What's it like?
That's the tallest tower in the world. It's outside of Fargo, North Dakota. And there's a series of 2,000 footers there. I mean, it isn't the only one that tall, but it's the tallest by about 15 feet. Taller than any other tower. The tallest one used to be in Poland, but that one fell down. I'll just put it that way.
I'd need an elevator to climb 2,000.
It has an elevator.
It has an elevator.
Yeah, the elevator goes up to about 1,800 feet and stops. And it's not your Otis elevator with the Muzak and the carpeted floor and the nice doors. It's kind of a box with a scissor gate on it. And it winches you up the inside. And then you get up to 1,800 feet and there's a platform. Car stops, you open the scissor gate, and you can walk out on the platform. Then there's a ladder that goes up the outside of the tower to take you up to the bottom of the TV antenna. So that goes up about 80 feet straight up the outside.
And you're the top of the world.
Well, then you get to the antenna. And the TV antenna is more like a cylinder or a power pole. So it's a cylindrical pipe that's 3 feet around. And it's self-supporting for 80 feet. And it has pegs that stick out of it like a telephone pole. So you climb the pegs up 80 feet. And then on top of that, there's another little platform and a little tower and a beacon above that. It's quite the structure.
Well, I know my knees would be weak and my hands wouldn't feel strong enough. I mean, do you get that feeling?
It's a mind game, really, because your eyes are looking and seeing that your hands are good, that your feet are good, and that you're in control of the situation. But in the back of your mind, it's saying, it's all over. This is it. You're done. So you have this mental combat going on that you really have to overcome to just focus on where you are. I think most people, we all live in a world of so much sky to so much ground. There's a ratio of green to blue or brown to blue, right? Mm-hmm. It's like 80% ground, 20% sky. Okay, now you go up 100, 200 feet in the air and you have flipped that ratio completely. It's now 80% sky, 20% ground. And that's when your mind starts really saying, this isn't right.
How long do you have to handle it? I mean, I understand if you have to get up there. Well, I sort of understand. You get up there and you turn something and then you come back down. But do you have to like spend all day up there?
I've spent 14 hours in the air, nonstop. Send up the coffee, send up the lunch, whatever. You know, we're here to do a job. We need to get this done. And somebody's off the air, you know. It isn't, you know, oh, geez, we're going to go into town and get lunch, so you come back down. For the fellows that are working on this tower, they have a hoist on the ground, so they're able to use the hoist to elevate themselves to their work point. They can ride up and down. And that's, they have an OSHA-approved hoisting device. And the operator has been trained in how to hoist personnel. So you're on the outside of the tower, and you get hoisted up. And then when you get to your work point, you unhook and you clip onto the tower.
We're probably not even supposed to talk about this. This is, I'm going to knock on wood, maybe we're not supposed to talk about it, but you tell me this. Do we lose tower operators every year? Tower climbers?
We've lost 14 men this year.
This year.
This year has been a bad year. We lost 8 last year.
Wow.
Yeah, I kind of watched, you know, what happens. There was a fellow in Oklahoma City just last week that perished on a tower job.
Do we ever know why?
Yes. It was human error.
What kind of human error?
He got tangled up with the elevator.
And so there's some research into this when this happens so you can learn, so other tower guys can learn.
Yes.
This is hard for you to talk about, isn't it?
No.
No?
It's a fact of, I mean, every walk of life loses people. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't like losing anybody, but it wasn't that. I was friends with this guy, too. So he was taken. It's one thing to lose somebody. It's another thing to have them taken.
Wow. And so the broadcast media, radio and television, you're doing it. People are doing it. Because it's your craft, it's your skill, but then it's also something you believe in, too. The importance of the broadcast media.
Absolutely. I mean, they're only for cellular, for all the towers that we have in this country, which is 250,000 towers right now. That's the number of towers with lights on them. Doesn't talk about the shorter ones. There's only about 25,000 people that work on these things. Mm-hmm. So the contractors are all very busy trying to not just build new things, but keep up with the maintenance of what's already up. And when I had the tower erecting company, which I ran for 20 years out of Wisconsin, after about 10 years, and we did broadcast, radio and television, we did public service, all kinds of different communication systems, I realized that we had touched just about every life in the state of Wisconsin, either with a broadcast or with a cop giving you a ticket because we've helped with the radio system that's in his car. I mean, just the ambulance that came and, you know, helped you when you needed them. It was pretty stunning. It's invisible infrastructure, Bob. You can see the power lines and say, oh, that's part of our infrastructure, and I can see that. To me, I look at all the radio waves and see it as a network. MNH Broadcasting has a network of stations, and they coordinate together to serve the public. And that's just huge. You know, there are things that we all do as broadcasters, you appreciate this, that the public is never aware of. They just receive the products that we deliver. Now, what it took to produce those products really isn't part of their world. That's part of our world. So we need to do it well and seamlessly. So it's just a dial that they push, a button they push, and there it is. They don't have to go out and turn a crank and right. string a wire out or, you know, go through a whole bunch of shenanigans to receive what we're sending out. So I look at it, if I do my work well, people don't even know that we've been there, other than something new appeared, a new station on the dial, or a new TV channel on the set, or more cellular. I used to work cellular too, but that's its own trade. And so I moved away from that.
Okay, and so for our listeners, bottom line, they'll get, say, a better, clearer signal in
yes.
more places. Is that
yep.
the bottom line for our listeners?
That's the bottom line. We're going to increase the coverage of KRLS-FM several miles in all directions. The biggest thing it will do along with that is fill in areas within the current listener area, to make it more dependable.
Well, all this work that you've done and your crew's done, it makes me think, well, I better pay real attention to what I'm producing, make sure it's as good as the system that's sending it out there.
We're all a cog in the works. And I really appreciate Mel Soor and MNH Broadcasting asking me to coordinate this project for them. Because I'm just the coordinator, and each craft person that I try and bring to the table, you know, is working on helping deliver this product too.